So this evening's theme, friendliness, is one of the most, at least the second most important of the meditation practices in the Theravada tradition anyway, after breathing meditation. And some people, of course, they usually combine meditations, not just keep it one exclusively, but mix them depending upon the situation. And one may find that if one starts off, say, with breathing meditation, it may be helpful at certain times to bring in other meditation themes, topics, and probably the most useful one is friendliness. In the Pali language, this is metta. Probably most of you have heard about it, maybe even know already. I don't need to talk anymore. it's so popular. Just like in the chanting we just did, the English one. That's the kind of guidance or the preliminary recitations to develop a practice of friendliness. Sometimes it's called loving kindness. Sometimes it's there's other translations, but I prefer the word friendliness because that's very close to the original meaning, metta or metra, maitri in Sanskrit, I think it is. And plus friendliness, I think most of us probably have a little bit more access to it. If we say loving kindness, maybe it's a little bit exalted, especially when it comes to trying to apply this practice to somebody maybe we have some difficulty with, people who are not very friendly to us. It's hard to love them, isn't it? But possibly you can be friendly, hospitable, you can kind of be civil, you can kind of be a bit humane to them, but love them? Well, okay, not yet. Maybe at the end of the talk you might be able to, or the end of the meditation practice you might be able to, but it takes development usually. And this practice of friendliness, as I say, it's one of the more universal ones, and I could say that it could be developed to a very, very advanced degree, comparable to using the breathing meditation for insight, because it has a potential to have very transformative possibilities. How it's usually practiced, I would say, just for the sake, maybe for the sake of explanation, I would say there's two kind of ways to practice, develop this practice of friendliness. One is the conventional one, and one is the ultimate. We're getting close to Buddhahood now, aren't we? So the conventional one is using this formula in the book, for example. First of all, we start off with ourselves. In the Buddhist meditation, it's important to have a direct experience with oneself, rather than just have high ideals. If one just had these principles, oh yes, it's good to be friendly, but you don't have a direct experience, it's not grounded. It's just a good idea, and maybe it doesn't really develop in its fullness then, because it's only in your mind. It's not a full experience. So we start off with ourselves, and some people think, well, this is kind of selfish, when the whole point of friendliness is to be friendly to other people in the whole world. But unless we get some real good grounding in our own experience, if we don't have a real experience of friendliness towards ourselves, then we don't know what it really is to express friendliness outside. There's that saying in the Bible, love your neighbor as yourself. When I read that, I just couldn't do it. Then I came to Buddhism and I realized that the real meaning of that is love your neighbor as you love yourself. If you don't love yourself, impossible to love your neighbor. It's just too idealistic. Love your neighbor. Oh, darn it. it's just one of these kind of high-minded ideals. But when you get some experience of well-being in yourself, you can say some love yourself to some degree, you begin to connect with all beings, because everybody, every sentient being, appreciates well-being. You know, any sentient being, sentient creature, get mixed up with the beings here. Any sentient creature, any creature that has sentience, appreciates positive sentience, appreciates positive sensations, positive feeling, positive experiences. You know, it's almost like an instinct, you know, and for some creatures, it is very instinctual. Whenever there is pain, whenever there is any kind of discomfort, they recoil. And you can see that in your own, you know, at the physical level. Any kind of pain comes along and you recoil away from it. But what happens when you feel good? Huh? Ah. You start purring. So it's a very fundamental experience too. And once we begin to experience a little bit of well-being, and you know, maybe we have to actually make a formal effort to cultivate it sometimes. And just like in the saying in the scripture here, or this chanting we did, it says, "May I be well." And there is, I think, in societies, you know, maybe Western societies, there is sometimes even a reluctance to allow oneself to feel well. You know, we have this kind of bit of a complex, you know, self-disparaging complex. You know, I don't deserve to feel well, you know, because I've done so many bad things, you know. Yeah. Just ask Santa Claus, you know, so... But, you know, well-being is actually part of the human condition. Part and parcel of the human condition, well-being. Then we get a little bit mixed up with our own, you know, neurotic thinking, but just being able to, if you look at just how the body feels at the sense level, you know, when the body is comfortable, can relax. Notice it when the body is relaxed, the mind becomes calmer, more peaceful. You have to be careful not to get too comfortable, otherwise you just kind of melt away. But if the body isn't very comfortable, what happens to your mind? How does your mind feel when your body's uncomfortable? I don't know, mine starts screaming. Ouch, 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 ouch. So some degree of well-being, comfort, if you like, is very important for spiritual development. It's important for, I can say, even a kind of a wholesome relationship to life. If one doesn't have some well-being in one's life, then one is not only uncomfortable, but one could even, I could say, people are even dangerous then. Because a lot of people do unskillful things, aggression or violence, because they aren't feeling well. Yeah, they're just kind of striking out, you know, their discomfort, their unhappiness, their displeasure, their suffering. They got to kind of strike out. And so when you understand that, rather than react with more anger, you have some compassion for people. And people do say unpleasant things, or they do do aggressive or violent things. You change your mentality. You see them now with compassion because they're suffering. Rather than say, they shouldn't be doing this. It's unfair. They shouldn't be doing this. Lock them up. You feel sorry for them. You feel some compassion for them. And the practice of friendliness, it can be developed and cultivated. And what this does, it kind of opens up the heart, if you like. Because the main principle behind it is, you know, that each one of us is defined, you know, our sense of self is defined by what we like and dislike. You know, so I don't like this, you know, so I have aversion towards it. towards certain things. And if I stay in that realm, or I even keep encouraging that, I increase my sense of self then. I'm that person who doesn't like this. And then as I get older, it gets even more irritable. I get even more cranky. But if you develop friendliness, it begins to shift. You shift your relationship to your self, if you like, or your definition of yourself. And maybe this requires some cultivation, because that doesn't come usually easily for people. And then we have to really be careful how we define friendliness. Like I say, if we are too idealistic about it, and we think, oh yes, I should be friendly. Or maybe I kind of have to rationalize it some way. And then I don't actually recognize that there is unpleasant and pleasant. It still exists. But it's how we relate to it. There still is skillful and unskillful. There is good and evil, if you like. It still exists in the world. But it's a relationship to it. I heard about somebody, how to make it a short example. When the Lockerbie bomber was released, and somebody in America, they were very angry, and they said, this is unfair, this is injustice, this makes me sick. I said, yes, right. You're hanging on to your desire for retribution and revenge. It's going to make you sick. If you can forgive, it can be very healing. You can really forgive and practice compassion rather than anger and revenge and hatred, and keep up with that. It's going to make you sick. So there's universal truth in this, that learning practice of friendliness, you could say maybe in a higher ideal, love, it is about freeing yourself from your limitations. And free yourself from all the limitations of, I don't like this, this is right, this is wrong, this isn't, shouldn't be this way. This, we're going into what I call the ultimate practice now of friendliness. It's learning to receive everything. I use the word receive very carefully, because this does not mean you have to accept it. It doesn't mean you have to love everything and everything's wonderful. But you just receive it. Yes, there is evil in the world. And if you don't receive it, you got a problem. You'll have anger, you'll have resistance, you'll have resentment, but it'll be unconscious. But if you can receive it and say, oh yes, there is evil in the world, I don't love it, it's not right, but I can receive it. I can open my heart to it. And when we can do that, we have a different relationship to it. If you close your heart to it, you have a very, very narrow perception. And we're left with our interpretation of this evil, my narrow interpretation of it. But if I can open to it, I can receive it. I can embrace it to a certain degree. I mean, we have to be realistic how much we're capable of. Then we begin to perhaps relate to it in a different way, a more skillful way. And perhaps we can see some other bigger lesson in this than we did before with our narrow-minded view of it. It's just wrong. It's not right. It's evil. If you look what aversion does to you, or anger does to you, you notice your heart closing up. But when you have friendliness, receptiveness, love, if you like, you notice the heart opens up. It's more relaxed. It's wider. So in a practical, in a conventional sense, we start off with this practice, first of all trying to experience some degree of well-being within ourselves, and maybe for some people that can be also quite a struggle sometimes, because there's certain parts of ourselves we don't like. But when you look at those, you can actually try to be more friendly to them, have a more friendly attitude. If part of it is based upon some understanding, you can rationalize it to a certain degree, and you recognize that, okay, anger, aversion, hatred is not a skillful thing, and I can try and shift it, try and change it around. For it to really flow, it needs to come from the heart. It needs to come from a much more deeper level, not just a rational level. So in the conventional sense, we start off with these, may I be well, may I be free from suffering, may I be free from anxiety and affliction and all these things. And at least having this positive thinking, you know, gives us an opening to it. It's a possibility there. And it is a wish, huh? May I be well. Yeah. And then maybe sometime it works fairly easily. When you're feeling well, you know, when you're feeling well, you say, may I be well. Well, it works pretty easy. When you're feeling miserable, a bit harder. You have to work with it a bit. Sometimes you need to find the right approach to it before it begins to actually open, before it begins to actually flow. You know, I knew about this practice of friendliness, and I tried it when I was in Thailand, you know, but it didn't really work at all. Mainly because I was trying to, you know, it says to spread friendliness, you know, to the all the directions and up above, to all the birds and all the insects. And then when the ants are crawling all over you, it's a little bit hard to be friendly to the ants. But the birds aren't too bad, you know, they don't bother you, but but I realized it was just coming from my head, you see. And then actually it didn't work very well, so then I kind of gave it up for a while. And then when I was in England, I was sitting in the morning meditation, and in the monastery in England, there's lots of rabbits on the lawn outside. And I was sitting looking out the window, and there's all these rabbits there, and then of course the rabbits are eating all the flowers. Nasty rabbits. But this one morning I just tried to be friendly to the rabbits, you know? And it really, really worked. You know, you're just changing your mentality. Rather than eating the rabbits, they're just eating. They're just eating whatever they can to fill themselves up. You know, they're just being rabbits. That's all. Here I was looking at them from a human point of view. They're eating our flowers, you see. But when you can open your heart to them and realize that's a rabbit. It's not a rabbit in a human form, you know, just a rabbit. Then it was fine. Then the rabbits just were frolicking about the garden, and I was happy, and they were happy, and it just happened. It just kind of worked for a while. So sometimes, you know, we try these exercises, but maybe we reach our limitation, and there's a great many ways we can actually practice it in a formal sense. You know, we can have some well-being, experience some well-being within ourselves, and then we're trying to generate it a bit more and begin to actually see what this well-being does to us. When the body's relaxed and you do feel well, you notice it, you know, your mind is more peaceful, mind is more open, mind is more energized. Oh, it is a positive thing. It does work. You know, let's see, you realize that the power of love really does have some energy to it. And then we can begin to actually spread this around. When one becomes the generator of well-being, then it begins to overflow. And that's what I find is the most effective way to actually practice it, rather than just have a high-minded ideal. Yes, I should love everybody. But when you're feeling well, you actually can express it. Okay, maybe we have our limitations. You know, so usually we start off with, you know, spreading this well-being with people who are easy to be well with. Our family, our friends, our close friends. And then we can try and extend it a bit further, you know, to more neutral people. And then the real test is to try and spread friendliness to people we have difficulty with. Our so-called enemies, or people we have conflict with. And this may take, you know, it takes quite a bit of practice. But if we keep recharging that well-being within ourselves, you know, we begin to, it comes from a place now where we connect with other people. They're human beings too. Maybe you don't like them, but they're a human being. If we look at go into our mind and rationalize them, well, they're unpleasant, or they're unfair, or they're unjust, or something about them that we don't like. But at the heart level, the human level, they're just like us. And it's probably there are people who judge us the same way we judge them. We think we're perfect, but ask our enemies how perfect we are. Huh? Ask your enemy how perfect you are. And then the ultimate practice, so I guess to the ultimate, this is where, I would say that we work primarily with ourself. Like I say, when we're feeling well, and we do feel well, it's quite easy to generate well-being and be friendly with that well-being. But then we probably meet our limitations if we continue with it. Whatever the limitations are. For example, the physical pain. Just sitting for some period of time, you get physical pain comes up eventually. And what do we do with it? How many of us go into a fighting complex? We hate it. Yeah, brings up all those unpleasant memories. We hate this pain. I've got to get rid of it. I've got to conquer it. It's an enemy. Try and be friendly to it. See if you can change your attitude to it. And maybe, it's hard to rationalize pain, I know. okay, is that one, no pain, no gain, okay, right, but I don't like that one. Whereas a practical exercise I found is to learn to relax into it. If you notice when there is physical pain arises, the body tenses up. That's this kind of instinct to fight with the pain. But if you're observing it, what happens is then when the body tenses up, it gets more painful. You get caught in this pain cycle then. A little bit of pain arises and the body tenses up and you get more pain. You get more pain and you tense up more. More pain, more tension. But if you can break the cycle, if you can learn to relax a bit, just learn to relax into it rather than actually go into the old contraction against it. Learn to physically relax with it. Breathe with it. Melt into it if you can. Become part of it. And we can learn this principle we're actually doing is the ultimate practice of friendliness is to transcend the subject-object duality. Because all of this thing, this pain, when I say pain, it's my ego comes up and says, ow, I don't like that. See? So there's a very strong subject there. And then the ego gets caught in all of its scenarios, how to get rid of it, how to cope with it, what to do with it. And you just keep building up the ego again. But if you can relax, you shift away from your automatic ego reactive syndrome into a different mode of being. You're not your old self anyway. At the very least, you're not your old self that hates the pain. You're a different self. You're now the friendly self, the relaxed self, the wise self, the mindful self now. A different kind of being then. And if we can learn to do this, in all situations, in a way, that simple lesson is the way to awakening. We can let go of that reference to that self continuously and relax and let go of it. Then that's the way to awakening. No self, if we can. And using the practice is kind of step by step. You notice something, you notice some unpleasant thought in your mind. Instead of just going into that ego mode again and trying to get rid of it, trying to cope with it, trying to rationalize it, and get rid of it. See if you can receive it. Yes, just receive it as it is. It'd be the craziest thought, the stupidest thought, the most painful emotion, just learn to receive it. Because that's the way it is. That's what's happening. And it's your ego that says, it's bad, I don't like it. But when you can just receive it openly, a non-judgmental reception of it, you step out of that ego limitation then, that reinforced sense of ego, if you can. Of course, many times it's very helpful also to have some support of mindfulness and concentration and energy and patience and many of these qualities we've discussed over the last quite a few weeks. But now, with the, you know, we're getting close to Buddhahood, right? So we should have kind of accumulated many, some of these supportive qualities to help us in this practice. And we also, you know, to have to be receptive to our limitations too. It's not that we just sit here and say, okay, yes, just open my heart to everything. There's one teacher, his famous saying was, keeping your heart open in hell. I remember that sometimes when I when it starts to get difficult. when hell closes over, your heart wants to close over too, but can you really keep it open? And when you can keep your heart open in hell, it's a different place. It's not the hell that you thought it was, or your ego says it is. Now it's a friendly hell, if you like, or something. But it's shifted. Yeah, when you can really learn to receive, I mean, to be able to receive the physical pain, for example, you have to learn to melt into it, to merge with it. And you get to the boundaries, the first level is, it's not so solid, not so hard, not so objectified. When your body tenses up, contracts, you notice how something like the pain gets more solid, doesn't it? It gets more objectified, more solid as an object. But when you can relax into it, it doesn't become so solid. A little bit softer edges to it. When we can receive some of these, you know, these unpleasant experiences, these emotions or states of mind, they aren't so solid. Doesn't mean that they disappear, but they're not quite so solid or tangible anymore. And when there is less solid object, there's less solid subject. Yeah, we're slowly releasing, we're letting go of this sense of self, of ego holding on, as the subject holding on to the object. As we learn to receive these different things, and most of the time, I would say that the real practice is usually in the things which are very unpleasant. You know, things which are pleasant, you know, it's very easy to be friendly to them, isn't it? Don't have to work at it. I'm really friendly to my well-being, but my bad being, I'm not so friendly to. So usually we have to work at that a bit more than the pleasant experiences. When there is unpleasant experiences, you can notice this tensing up, this contraction of our being too. Not only the body, but our very being. And then we try and, okay, how do I get rid of it? How do I cope with this? What's my strategy now, coping strategy? And there's the ego again. We're starting to play out all the ego stories and reinforcing that whole scenario again. Where if you just shift and just learn to receive it, be more open, receptive, patient, receiving of it is quite a different experience, and it can become more attenuated. It can become more soft and less solid. And if you can continue with that, sometimes it just fades away. But before was seemingly like a very hellish experience. You know, if you keep your heart open in it and you keep your clarity in it, it doesn't. You know, it's quite all right. Yeah, it's the thought about it. It's our conceptualizing of it. It's our judging about it, which is the worst part of it. When you can just open your heart to it and receive it a bit more friendly, with a bit more friendliness, quite a different experience. And if we can do this with all situations, it also can be developed to the ultimate. But because of the conceptual approach of it, there's a tendency it can be limited. You know, I'm still trying to be friendly to my enemy. So yeah, I can go on and on and on about it. But if you really you really receive them openly and receive them, then the me and the enemy are the same. You transcend this differentiation, this duality then. And, you know, when there's a situation, especially with, say, with a person, what it does provide, at the very least, is new possibilities. You know, if you're holding somebody in your mind, they're like this, then they're never going to change. You know, they actually change, but your mind doesn't. Your concept of them doesn't change, you see. So you keep going over, they're like this, they're like this, they're like this. And you keep reinforcing that. But actually, maybe they've changed. Maybe they've forgiven you. They've done something different. But when you actually can receive them in a more immediate situation, in the presence, you can actually receive that change. And you can receive your own changing mind, too. So it's a dynamic process then, not holding on to these fixed views and fixed images then. And then many possibilities are there then. Many more possibilities. If you're holding on to somebody with a fixed view like this, only one possibility, kill them. But if you can receive them in a bit wider perspective, many possibilities there. You know, many other possibilities. When I was in England, I used to go to Northern Ireland regularly to give some teachings, and somebody there asked me about a difficult person they had at work, and they couldn't get rid of the person at the workplace. Yeah, so I suggested they practice this friendliness, and they were a Buddhist meditator, so they knew about this. So I go there every 3 months. So I told her about it this one time, and then 3 months later I went back again and I said, well, how is it? And she said, well, it's much better actually. Because she wasn't actually reinforcing this person, you know, this person over and over again doing, and she was doing difficult things, you know, she wasn't, not only for her, but everybody else in the workplace also was being irritated by her. But if you try to be more friendly and not fix her in this negative way all the time, and person begin to change. The relationship changed. 3 months later, went back again. She said, oh, it's totally resolved. The person's left now. Oh, darn, you can't practice anymore. But when you have a changing attitude, a more friendly attitude, there is this transformative aspect to friendliness, because it's opening your heart. And when your heart opens, it opens to many more possibilities, not just the very limited ones that you have when you hold them in a fixed way. You know, and we are changing, and they are changing. You know, that's part of it too, is that we are the ones who are changing too. You know, if we stay with our old attitudes, and our old habitual tendencies, you know, you can say somebody did something unfair to you, and you can hold on to it. You know, they've been unfair, they've been unjust, and all this. But when you're a bit more open, a bit more friendly to them, you know, that unfairness and that injustice, maybe it's just a mistake. You know? You're holding on to your mind that they had a personal vendetta against you or something. But maybe it was just a mistake. They didn't even mean it, perhaps. You know, it's just your perception. It's only your perception. It's not, we think it's reality or it's the truth, but it's just your perception. So when you develop a bit more friendliness, openness, then your hard and fixed view begins to shift, begins to change, to soften, and you open to more possibilities. Yes, maybe it was misunderstanding. Maybe it wasn't so, you know, an intended action against me or something. And this provides a possibility not only to more and a more openness of heart, but lightness of heart too. We learn to flow more with things. Because when we hold on to these fixed ideas, it holds us down. It imprisons us. And not only to ourself, but to our and the self's very limited perceptions and views and interpretations. But when you can open your heart a bit more, you'll begin to flow with many wider range of possibilities there. And sometimes you may notice that some of these difficulties just kind of, whoa, just fade away. What happened? And you get lonely. You haven't got your enemy anymore. Who are you going to be? You have nothing to live for if you can't bother somebody. Or you notice, especially with yourself, you know, certain of your attitudes and, you know, being very self-judgmental or being very self-critical or something. If you can be a bit more friendly towards that attitude, you know, then you can recognize that, you know, okay, maybe it softens a little bit, okay. And maybe you find you can even laugh at it sometimes. Maybe it's still there. But you can laugh at it. Oh, there's that critical mind again. Aha. You don't take it so literally or so concretely anymore. You're a bit more friendly to it. You know, and I'm sure we all know the power of friendship, right? That's why I use that word friendliness, because we all actually have some experience of friendliness, of friendship, what it can do to us, what support it can give us. If somebody's really a friend, they can give us some extra support. You know, just that kind word when we need it. And we can feel so depressed, or we can feel so self-critical, and the person says, "Ah, never mind, relax." That's really a good friend. We can develop that in our own mind, have a good friend like that. Not to be so judgmental, not to be so critical, not to be so hard or objective with ourselves. Most of the time, of course, this needs practice, because, you know, the nature of a human being is to have habitual tendencies. The sankharas are called habit tendencies. So we tend to go back, you know, by default, go back into these old patterns again and again. By developing friendliness, it helps us to break out of those old habits. You know, at the very least, they aren't so solid, they aren't so rigid, they aren't so fixed. And sometimes we just grow out of them. And we can actually look at them and laugh at them. Yeah. Where if we try and get rid of them, for example, and with negativity or with aversion, try and get rid of them, we end up with another, you know, habitual tendency, another negative one, another judgmental one, you know. Me being judgmental about my judgmentalism, you know. Being critical about my critical mind, you know. Whereas if you're more receptive and friendly to it, it dissolves it completely from the inside out. It's like the power of friendliness, the power of love, if you like, dissolves it from the inside out. And once we learn this kind of principle, it's a fundamental principle. You know, when something comes up, and this is a fundamental support for mindfulness too. We're trying to be aware of something. You know, especially unpleasant things can be quite difficult, I think. You don't like to be too mindful, too aware of unpleasant aspects of ourself, for example. But if you're more friendly to it, it allows you to come closer. You know, if there were unpleasant aspects of myself, usually I see them as enemies, so I keep them at arm's length. So how can I ever see them clearly? If I can be a bit more friendly to them, then it allows me to come a bit more closer to them, begin to see them more clearly as they really are, not just how I imagine them to be. And when there is a little bit more friendliness, it allows mindfulness and clarity to become sharper as well. Not only is it, you know, there's a danger that mindfulness can be, as it becomes more clear, can also become critical. And without friendliness, then it becomes a kind of a judgmental kind of awareness. You know? And there is that aspect to it too, because in religion, you know, well, there is the good stuff and the bad stuff, you know, the skillful and the unskillful. But to really, really know what is the skillful and unskillful, you have to be open to the whole picture. You have to be really open to the unskillful, to the negative. Be open to that too before you know what the skillful is. Just like when I mentioned when we come in to sit, first of all, just be aware. What's the condition of body and mind you're with right now? Even if the body is not comfortable, try and be open to it. It's not uncomfortable. What kind of uncomfort is it really? Rather than say, uncomfortable, I don't want to see it. Or uncomfortable, get rid of it. But what kind of uncomfort, or that's not a word, is it? What kind of discomfort? What kind of discomfort is it? Until you really see it really clearly, you're not going to be able to really do anything about it. You're not going to be able to work with it in a skillful way if you don't really know what that discomfort is. Right? If you just gloss over it, oh, discomfort, ignore it, get rid of it. I don't want to see it. But when you can really receive it, then you can really go into it and you can explore it and discover it more truthfully, how it really is. Then you can resolve it there. Only by getting to the real source, the real nature of these things, can we do something with it. Otherwise, we're just glossing over it. So this is where friendliness and mindfulness work together. You know, this allows us to be more receptive, more open. And openness is awareness, clear seeing. These days, to support each other then. And being able to more clearly see what it is that we're unfriendly to, what it is we're pushing away, whenever you notice any resistance there. Oh, resistance. Oh, that's interesting. What am I resisting? There's something I don't like. There's some unfriendliness there. And begin to open to that. And look more clearly. And look more clearly what's there. And then be open to that too. That goes back into deeper and deeper levels of our being then. This is why I say it's the real practice is on the ultimate level, because it's a support. It's not just a matter of, you know, me being friendly to my enemies, but it needs to be to transcend that self-limitations we have. It becomes something which is opening, and we're kind of flowing with it, opening continuously. But that's, and we want to be aware of the truth, we need to open to the truth, be receptive to the truth. In a way, the truth is already here. All we need is to be receptive to it, to receive it. But we all have our, you know, our limitations. I don't like that part of the truth. It hurts too much. Until we learn to be friendly with reality, we're never going to be able to receive it, even though it's right in front of our face. So the practice of friendliness, I mean, it can... Certainly, it can be very helpful to be able to do this in a conscious way. For example, when we first come to sit, you know, some people would start their meditation when they first come to sit by, may I be well in this meditation, may I be well, contacting a sense of well-being. However you may experience that, physically, mentally, emotionally. And if there's not well-being there, interesting. Try and be friendly to that lack of well-being. Try and be receptive to that. Yeah, why isn't there well-being there? You know? Many times it's like an ongoing process. Receptiveness to receptiveness to friendliness to be friendliness. And we start off with that in a practice, and you find that maybe it begin to remove some of the obstacles. Yeah. Some people, they try and make meditation. They come to meditation, they want to make it happen. Whereas this way, if you just look and see what's obstructing your meditation, what's preventing you, what's preventing the mind from becoming calm, what's preventing the body from becoming relaxed, yeah. Be receptive to that and undo it there, rather than try and create meditation on top of this discomfort. This is a way of letting go or going into and discovering it from the inside. The practice of friendliness then, once it gets developed, once it gets you get some kind of handle on it, and you see some usefulness of it, and we can apply it for everything that comes along. Not only when you have a conflict with somebody, but you have a conflict with your knees every day. The conflict with your busy mind every day. Yeah. Try and be friendly to your busy mind. See what happens. A friendly busy mind. And then you can tune into it, and it can become a helpful busy mind then. See? If it's a friendly, busy mind, maybe it's useful. At least you don't fall asleep. If you have an unfriendly, busy mind, that's really terrible, isn't it? You're fighting with yourself all the time. But if you've got a friendly, busy mind, fine. It keeps me awake anyway. It's much more useful than watching television. So the practice of friendliness is why it's one of the most one of the more universal ones, because it's applicable in all kinds of situations. And if one develops this ability to practice it in the ultimate sense, just being receptive, open to all kinds of situations, physical, mental, whatever comes along, we're open to it. That's just the way it is. You can see it more clearly. Then there's no obstructions. The truth is already there. It's just our distractions that prevent us from seeing it. And if we can begin to receive all that, our mind becomes bigger, our heart becomes bigger and bigger, and then we step outside that limitation of the ego, of the self. And we begin to get a real taste of what liberation really is then. The unbounded mind, unbounded heart, no limitations. This is what then maybe is called in some traditions the unconditional love then. The love, the openness which is unconditioned, not held down, not conditioned by anything. That's the unconditioned in Buddhism. So I think I should pause there and I wish you further practice in your development of friendliness.